are listening to the Elephant in the Room podcast with your host, Sutta Singh. Each week, we will bring you a diverse range of inspiring speakers on issues of inequality and inequity. You will hear stories about fairness, justice, belonging, and about best practice for creating a more inclusive workplace. So, if you are an individual or leader interested in a fairer, equitable, compassionate society and workplace, this podcast is for you.
9th August was the International Day of World's Indigenous Peoples. On the day, Pradhan announced India's first ever annual Adivasi Development Indices Report, or ADI. Through ADI, Pradhan seeks to mainstream awareness about one of the largest hidden minority groups in the country. So I invited Dibendu Chaudhary, an integrator in the research and advocacy team at Pradhan, to the Elephant in the Room podcast to learn more about this brilliant initiative. Good afternoon, Dibendu. Thank you very much for being a guest on the Elephant in the Room podcast today.
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to talk about the indigenous people, their ideas, philosophy, and their issues. Thank you so much.
Great. So what is the significance of the International Day of Indigenous People that is celebrated on 9th August? And I will be honest, I did not know about this until this year.
So what I know, I can tell you.
Yeah.
So worldwide, indigenous people have their own diverse languages, cultures, rituals, and worldviews. Worldviews means their way of living, their philosophy, their relationship with nature, their relationship with their own neighbors, the way they structure their society, their livelihoods, their knowledge system, or even their language. All these are shaped by this philosophy, which you may call tribal worldview, the indigenous people's worldview. Now, what is common among all these indigenous people worldwide is that all of them faced the same challenge throughout history. And that challenge is the attack they faced from another worldview, the so-called modern worldview, which is based on, you know, hierarchy, personal progress, exploitation of nature. Now, this worldview dominates the indigenous people's worldview. The worldview of indigenous people is considered backward by this modern worldview. In fact, all of us, you, me, probably all of us are subscribers to this modern worldview. So as a result, the indigenous people have been asked to follow the same path that the industrial society, the modern society, has followed. So in this clash of worldviews, indigenous people started losing their culture, their way of living. However, they never could fully be part of the modern society, nor the modern society could provide them everything that would have been required for them to be able to grab the opportunity available in the modern society. Now, let us come back to India. In India, people who were originally not part of the caste society and actually remained away from them are considered indigenous people. In Hindi, we call them Adivasis. They also want to be known as Adivasis. They have a worldview different from the non-Adivasis. This worldview is also of a non-hierarchical relationship with nature and people. They believe in togetherness, and for them, community well-being is considered more important than the individual progress. They think that they are part of nature. They take things from nature in a way that does not hinder the process of natural rejuvenation. Because of their association with nature, they have developed a knowledge system that is more social. Social in a sense that it belongs to the community. So though there have been many clashes with the caste society and monarchy in India, even 2000 years ago, there is no evidence that the caste society people used to think of Adivasis as backward or inferior. They were considered different, but not backward. For example, you may know Kautilya was an Indian political economist. Yeah. He wrote a book called Arthashastra. Yeah. So there he mentioned how to defeat the Gansanghas. Gansangha can be translated as democratic states run by the tribal assemblies, as they were threats to monarchy. But there is no mention that they were backward. Calling them as backward happened during the colonial period. When British colonizers came, they started using the term tribe. That was when this group of people with a different worldview and culture became known as backward. So tribal means backward. The same pattern continued even after independence. The mainstream people continued to think of them as backward and could not recognize that there can be multiple worldviews. Apart from that, the Adivasis of Central Indian Plateau since the colonial period and after the independence also have been displaced and dispossessed for development projects such as large dams construction or establishing mining projects or mineral factories. So on this International Day of World's Indigenous People, which was yesterday, the world recognizes that there can be multiple worldviews, multiple ways of living. And this multiplicity is recognized on that day.
That's very insightful. Moving on, yesterday, Pradhan also announced the launch of the first ever annual Adivasi Development Indices report. Yeah. What is the purpose of this report? And I'm a bit staggered, you know, like I said, I didn't know that India has such a huge population of Adivasis. That is like 8.6% or 101 million people, which is like bigger than the population of
many
UK.
States, Many countries in Europe. Yeah.
So tell us about this development indices. What is the need for it? And what is the purpose of this report?
Yeah, I can talk about the purpose. Since independence, many programs and schemes have been launched by Government of India and even non-government agencies to improve the situation of the Adivasi people. The Government of India, in its fifth five-year plan, came up with the provision of something called tribal sub-plan, which is basically an allocation made by the central government for development of scheduled tribe people in the state. Scheduled tribe peoples are the Adivasis. So mostly these terms in India are used interchangeably. There are other state and central schemes as well. So there are other poverty alleviation schemes as well, like Employment Guarantee Act, you know about NREGA, Right to Food Act, Right to Education Act. All these are not targeted towards only the Adivasis. They also safeguard the interest of the tribal people, the Adivasi people. However, the situation of people in Central Indian Plateau is not changing. This is still one of the most poverty-stricken pocket in India. The income gap in India is generally attributed to the very low per capita income residing in this area. And if you think about other parameters such as life expectancy at birth, literacy rate, infant mortality rate, this area shows worse results in comparison with national figures. Further, within the Central Indian Plateau, Adivasis are most marginalized if you compare Adivasis with non-Adivasis, even within the Central Indian Plateau. The HDI, Human Development Index, of tribes in India is 30% lower than the national HDI of India. What are livelihood outcomes? Income, food security, dietary diversity, what kind of food you eat, whether you get to get all kinds of foods. The other parameters are also very, very poor. However, there is a lack of systematic effort to periodically track those livelihood outcomes. Annual Adivasi Development Indices report is supposed to show the policymakers in a periodic manner what is happening to the livelihood of Adivasis so that changes, if needed, can be done in approach and allocation of resources. So this will help the administration and policymakers to design and implement schemes and programs based on ground realities. We had a wish to include the entire Central India in this study. However, for resource constraints, this year we will start with two states. We have already started with two states, Odisha and Jharkhand. Secondly, it will create a database that can be used to compare this situation of Adivasis of Central India with the rest of the population in India in terms of their resource base, livelihood sources, income, food adequacy, nutrition, health situation, indebtedness, all these things. And thirdly, it will also help general citizen of India to know about Adivasis and their current status.
Essentially, it would help to provide benchmark data.
on livelihood canvas.
And something like this does not exist at this point in time, right?
There are some reports, but they are scattered. Like, well, it was done once upon a time, but then there was no continuous effort. So the specialty of Adi is it will be a annual report. There will be a periodicity to this report. So you'll be able to see if there is any change or the things are static.
Tell us something about the research methodology and the experts who are involved in supporting this benchmark report. You've already mentioned that you'll be scaling up the study in the future, because I wanted to ask you about that also.
So let me start with the conceptual framework of the study. So there are six aspects that have been studied in order to make an assessment of the status of livelihood. So the first one is the cultural ethos. I was talking about the worldview. So this worldview reflects in culture in which livelihoods are practiced. So the cultural ethos of a community influences the thinking of members in relation to their own life goals, in relation to their interaction with resources, and also with each other. So that is very, very important. The first one is cultural ethos in which the livelihoods are practiced. Second one is the resource base within which the livelihoods are practiced, like the natural resources such as land, forest, water, the quality of those resources, access to and control over those resources. So those are very, very important. So this is the second thing. The third thing is external intervention to improve those resources, like external intervention by government, external intervention by maybe agencies. One more fundamental part is the attribute of the households themselves, like their skill level, their knowledge level, their health, their education. So this is the attributes of the households. Based on cultural ethos, resource base, external intervention, and attributes of the households, any household does some kind of a livelihood activities. So then we will have specific activities practiced in livelihoods. And the last point is, based on all these five things, you get livelihood outcomes. And those livelihood outcomes are in terms of food security, dietary diversity, income, also health, also education. So this is the entire framework. We obtained information on cultural ethos of the communities, as well as on certain dimensions of the resource base and external interventions from intellectuals who belong to Adivasi societies, from activists from Adivasi societies, and academia through interviews.
Are there any particular prominent influencers from the community you'd like to name?
We talked to Dr. Virginia Skakha, who is a very, very eminent personality in India as far as tribal studies are concerned. We talked to James Herenge, who is an activist. We talked to Ms. Dayamani Barla, who is an activist, who is also famous for a movement called Quail Karo Movement. And we talked to Dr. Bipin Jojo. We talked to Gunjal Munda. We talked to Jacinta. So a lot of prominent people. And then information concerning the local resource base and issues of external influences. So all those were obtained through focus group discussion in the villages. Then information on household attributes and livelihood outcomes were necessarily obtained through household surveys. The sample size was 5,000 for the Adivasi households. And we also took around 1,500 non-Adivasi household as a control sample size. And it was decided in such a manner that we will be able to make statistically significant inferences at the state level. So we'll be able to say something about Jharkhand, we'll be able to say something about Odisha. At the same time, the sample size will let us make a comparison between major tribal groups. Major tribal groups means like Santhal, Urao, those who are like more in numbers in terms of their population. And the particularly vulnerable tribal groups. These are called PVTG in short. These are smaller tribal groups who traditionally used to be artisans or shifting cultivators. And the population of these group of people are very, very less. So we'll be able to compare all the variables between these two groups, like the major tribal groups and the PVTGs. So research and advocacy unit is spearheading this work mostly. And we have taken help from academicians, activists to design the study. We took help from Nandini Sundar from Delhi University. We took help from, again, Johnny Woman, you'll be knowing. He's a doctor. Yeah. So James Herenge, we took help of. Yeah. So yeah. Then we designed based on their feedback. And probably after the first report, the first draft report comes up, we'll again go to them. We'll take their feedback. And based on that, we'll rectify our report. This time we have started with Odisha and Jharkhand, and we have a plan to include more states.
Brilliant. So Adivasis make up 8.6% of India and almost 11.3% of rural India, but they continue to live on the fringes of society and development. Why is that?
This is a very, very interesting question. See, I read many history books and it talks about many factors. So I'm not going to history, but ultimately for different historical reasons, the Adivasis by and large live in forest fringe areas or in forest areas in the central Indian plateau, in the forests itself. So I'm not here talking about the tribal groups of Northeast India. Their story is entirely different. Now, it is true that since independence, the central and state governments are working to improve the situation of Adivasis. However, two things happened which have been largely overlooked. Firstly, the Adivasis continued to say that they were different and they should be allowed to decide their own path of development. But the state didn't hear that. They heard that Adivasis wanted development. They didn't hear that Adivasis are also saying that we are different. So Adivasis were not given the chance to decide their own development path. They remained beneficiaries rather than designers of their own destiny. So the acts like PESA, which is actually an act for self-governance of Adivasi, didn't get fully implemented in Lateran spirit. But had it been implemented fully, it would have changed the entire scenario of self-governance. So PESA gives the Adivasis an opportunity to self-govern themselves. Self-governing means they will have authority and say over what is going to happen with their resources, what is going to happen to their lands, forests. So ultimately, the Gram Sabha, which is governing body within the village, a traditional governing body of the Adivasis.
So you've just mentioned this is the silver jubilee of PESA, and this was meant to empower communities in Adivasi regions, but it has not helped, right? So what I'm asking you is a repetition of the last question. In spite of effort, why has this not managed to move the development agenda for indigenous communities? What are your thoughts on this?
I would not say it has hindered. It has not yet been implemented fully in its literal spirit. The issue is PESA is an act. Now, the states which comes under PESA, there are 10 states, they have to formulate their own rules. Now, 4 states, which are more or less like the most Adivasi-dominated states, like Odisha, Jharkhand, Madhya Pradesh, Chhattisgarh, they have not yet formulated. PESA has not been implemented fully in no states. Even the states who have made the rules, they have not also fully implemented it. The problem is it has not been implemented fully. And probably it's because some people in the area may not be wanting this to happen. And that's why it's not happening.
Last year, the Jharkhand Assembly passed a resolution titled to propose a provision to provide a separate Sarna Dharm code for Adivasis of the state in Census 2021 before the central government. Now, this is a part of the continued effort to get recognition for tribal religion. How significant is this for Adivasi identity in India?
Yeah, that will be an important step in the struggle for Adivasi identity. Adivasi worldview is about living with nature that I already talked about and worshipping nature. This is non-hierarchical. And on the other hand, if you look at the mainstream religious ideologies such as Christianity or Hinduism, these are based on a worldview which is hierarchical that gets reflected in their rituals. Now, Adivasis are continuously saying that they are different. This distinction has not been recognized. They have been considered only as a set of poor people. The recognition of a separate tribal religion will be a step towards the recognition of the fact that there exist many ways of living, and all these ways of living are legitimate. So that's why this is very, very important.
I read a report from last year that said that the tribal communities of India collect non-timber forest timber products, which are called NTFPs. And this is estimated to be worth around 2 trillion annually. I was staggered at the figure. However, these collections don't translate into prosperity and steady income for the community. And Pradhan's focus since inception has been on livelihoods. Does Pradhan work specifically with tribal communities on livelihood programs, perhaps to organize them into collectives or cooperatives so better bargaining power for the NTFPs, or is this not within the ambit of your work?
It is in our ambit of work. Pradhan works with Adivasis to strengthen their livelihood. And this includes agriculture, horticulture. In fact, 50% of people with whom Pradhan works are Adivasis. Now, talking about forest-based livelihoods, it includes two kinds of intervention from Pradhan. One is called Tasar sericulture, which used to be the traditional activity of the tribes. They used to rear Tasar cocoon. Pradhan helped them improve the quality and quantity of Tasar host plants and trained Adivasi youth to identify disease-free layings with the help of microscopes. So these are the interventions. This has reduced the risk of crop failure to a great extent. There are village-level groups who are involved in Tasar cocoon rearing. Through their producer companies or cooperatives, they sell their products, and the cooperatives help to negotiate price, as you already said. Another forest-based activity was the cultivation of lac. And Pradhan also helped to reduce risk involved in this activity by providing training on controlling disease and pests. For agriculture and horticulture activities, also Pradhan is in the process of promoting farmer producers organization. This helps them to identify crops that can fetch better price in the market, APOs as they are called, helps the farmers with sustainable cultivation practices, and it also helps in input procurement in bulk and thereby reducing the production cost to a great extent. Another strategy is to rejuvenate natural resources by soil and moisture conservation, land development, plantation, rainwater harvesting. And Pradhan also has promoted micro-enterprises such as broiler poultry farming. The poultry cooperatives absorb shocks in the market through various mechanisms. So all these activities are integrated at SHG level, women managed self-help group levels. These are women groups who help women from all households to plan their livelihood activities and provide small loans, either from their own kitty or through bank finance. Now, SHGs take loans from the banks and then does sublending to its members when the SHGs do not have enough fund with them. Mm-hmm. Apart from all these, there are action research projects going on. I myself is a part of one of these action researchers, to come up with methodologies so that Adivasis can regenerate their own traditional knowledge system and adapt those things in today's context.
Okay, so this is the last question. In the long term, what is the expectation of Adi? Do you see it as a repository of knowledge and information for the government, donors, partners, academics? What is the ambition for it?
So that's a very good question, yeah. So, yes, of course, as I said earlier, this is going to be a database that will help the policymakers to understand the ground situation and modify their approach and resource allocation accordingly. However, we want to see this as the voice of Adivasis more than something to be used by others as research materials. So the long-term plan is that the Adivasi community will own this and take Adi as their own expression, as if they are telling others, see, this is our worldview, this is our cultural ethos, this is our livelihood base, and this is our livelihood outcomes. Yeah, that is the main objective of
Adi is going to be their voice.
Yes, that is what we want.
That is amazing. What a brilliant way to end this conversation. Thank you so much, Debendu, for being here today and sharing your immense knowledge and insights on the Adivasis in India.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Elephant in the Room podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on any of your favorite platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. And if you enjoyed listening to the podcast today, don't forget to write a review and tell your friends. Sign up on the link in the show notes to receive updates on our guest speakers, blogs, and events. And don't forget to tune in every Thursday for new episodes.